This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. So carbon is the source of life, but too much of a good thing can be very harmful. Our guests have been working on a solution for removing carbon from our atmosphere. With us are Kirthana Srinivasan, the project manager for the UW-Madison Earth Repair X Prize Challenge team. She's just graduated with a master's degree in civil and environmental engineering from UW-Madison. Hi, Kirthana.
Hello, how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for joining us today. And with her is Rob Annex. He is a professor of biological engineering at UW-Madison, and he's the co-founder of Earth Repair Project, and they have built a process of taking carbon out of the air and recycling it into construction materials. What would you like to know about removing carbon? Well, join in by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And hi, Rob.
Hello.
Hi. So tell us, let's just get straight to the point here. What's the difference between the Earth Repair X Prize and the Earth Repair Project? Because they sound the same to me.
Well, and one becomes the other.
Okay.
So we, as we were developing this technology, a group of students that work with us formed this team because Elon Musk put $100 million into the X Prize Foundation to remove a gigaton of carbon from the atmosphere. And we said, well, let's go for that.
Yeah.
and the students won the largest prize the student team could get.
Wow.
And then we've been moving on to try to commercialize the technology and using the same name because
okay.
we got some good publicity.
Yeah, and it's a great name, too. So it's spelled REP, capital A, capital I, capital R. So you see the air, so very cute. Why don't you explain the process? Just simply, don't go into the weeds for us, but what is the process?
Well, let's see now.
Yes, simply. I know. You're an engineer.
So we have a liquid that mm-hmm. has a high affinity. It really likes CO2. It will grab onto CO2. And so we run that through what looks like a big cooling tower, and it captures CO2. Well, now we run that through what we refer to as mineral wastes, industrial mineral wastes, but that might be fly ash, steel slag, these alkaline materials.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, the carbon that's been picked up by that sorbent material becomes part of that ash or that mineral waste.
So it kind of joins with it?
Joins it and leaves it there. And the wonderful thing is that it regenerates the sorbent material. They can go back and capture more CO2. And that's really it. So we have this... The fancy word is carbonated. We
uh-huh.
have this material that comes out the bottom that has the carbon in it, and that can be used in the cement industry.
That's a very cool idea. Now, Kirthana, how much carbon dioxide is actually in our atmosphere right now, and why is it a problem? What does it cause us? Why do we need to remove it, I guess?
Sure. Well, carbon dioxide, I'm sure maybe some of you have heard of the word of greenhouse gas emissions or any kind of gas that's in our atmosphere. When it stays in our atmosphere, it actually causes more warming. And sometimes, you know, I mean, we live in the Midwest, we'd like warming, but actually, just the temperature as it changes, it causes a lot more problems, like a lot more extreme weather events. We have drier climates. We might have additional risks in terms of forest fires, the sea levels rising, as in it's causing our ice to melt, sea levels are rising, causing floods, cities like Miami or kind of any small islands that are right by the sea level, they would be in danger as our temperature keeps increasing. And, you know, as the temperature keeps increasing and we have this kind of unbearable situation, there's a lot more climate refugees now. So people aren't able to live and sustain where they usually were. So they're moving around. They're having to displace their entire livelihood. So it's not great, and it is something that we need to be addressing. So right now, why are still emitting 50 billion tons of carbon dioxide per year? So if we want to kind of take action and meet our goals, one of the most common goals that we're trying to reach is limiting our temperatures from increasing above 2 degrees Celsius. So what that means basically is that we should not be emitting any CO2 by the year 2050, which isn't too far away. And actually, we're still, like, our carbon dioxide emissions, we're still increasing that by, like, 1.5% annually. So if we need to kind of meet our climate goals and try to reduce as much of the effects that we can, we need to be able to remove all of our emissions, or rather stop them, and remove the existing carbon dioxide that's in our atmosphere. Because what's in our atmosphere right now is still causing that warmth and warming. So we need to be able to remove some that's already in our atmosphere. So I think sometimes it's referred to as legacy CO2 or carbon dioxide. So that might be something that we might say later on during this interview as well.
Okay. Now, there have been times, you know, in Earth's history where there have been a spike in carbon. Excuse me. So how does that compare with what we have now?
Well, we're still seeing a rise in carbon. I think even last year after COVID, we had a 6% increase in our CO2 emissions. What's different is that we're still increasing, and the marginal effects of any increase right now, the effects are going to be much larger. So it's kind of like any little more that we put, our effects are going to be much larger than what we saw back then. So we need to be taking more action now.
Mm-hmm. And Rob, the government says that the country needs to get to net zero emissions in the next 30 years. Why don't you explain what that means?
Well, we need to get to net zero. What that means is that the amount that we pull out of the atmosphere and the amount that we emit have to add up to zero, right? So reducing emissions is difficult and sometimes inconvenient. So there are industries like aviation and steel and cement that use a lot of heat, and it's very, very hard to decarbonize them, meaning eliminate the emissions. So to balance those, we need to be able to pull carbon out of the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. And we had earlier said that we need to remove 10 billion tons from the atmosphere each year. Can you give me an example of how much a ton of carbon is? Because, I mean, that's just, you know, astronomical. So.
Well, it is astronomical. This is a big challenge. Mm-hmm. So a silver maple tree growing for 25 years, assuming it survives 25 years, will pull about 400 pounds of carbon out of the atmosphere. So five silver maples growing for 25 years, a nice little grove of silver maples like I have in my backyard will be one ton. And as you said, we need to be pulling 20 billion.
Oh, it's 20 billion.
Well, 20 gigatons is... Well, gotcha. 10 to 20 is the official kind of number,
okay.
Right? I mean, none of this is that precise.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's math, and I don't do that. So, Kirthana, what is being done right now to remove carbon? I mean, are there other things going on, obviously, besides the research that you've been working with?
Definitely. So there's a lot of ways that we could reduce carbon emissions. We have, of course, like, you know, increasing renewables, the electrification of our transportation, those all reduce our emissions itself. And then there are a bunch of technologies that that are called carbon removal technologies, or that remove the CO2 from the atmosphere. So an example of that, a simple example, is just actually afforestation, which is building a lot of trees. There's a couple of technologies that is ocean capture. So the ocean is actually able to capture CO2. So there are a bunch of processes that are able to kind of speed up that process. And then there are a couple of technologies such as ours, which is direct air capture, which uses some kind of material that that likes CO2 and can actually absorb it from the atmosphere. So that's direct air capture. So these are just a couple of the very many processes that are being developed right now.
And, you know, you talked about conserving energy and reducing emissions and things. So why did you decide, you and Rob, basically, to tackle the emissions that already exist? Why focus there, you know, rather to clean up rather than preventative?
Well, we're already at the point where we need to address what's already there. Even if we need to reach that 2 degree Celsius goal or a more ambitious goal of 1.5 degrees Celsius, we still need to remove this existing CO2 in our atmosphere. And it's a little more of a tougher problem, and it's still growing. It has to be done. And when we were developing this process in the lab, we came across it and we're like, wow, you know, we've been missing this. And our technology has a good scope to scale up, and which we need. So there's a lot of funding and energy that's going into preventing emissions and, you know, becoming more energy efficient. There's not too much in this field. And so we'd like to contribute our part to, you know, removing what's already there.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, Rob, now, just to make it clear, this is still all in the lab, right? Do you have is it out there in the world doing stuff? Or are you still working on that part of it?
We're definitely still working on that part. So we've demonstrated it in what we would call large lab scale, right? So not in a beaker.
That's good.
But in a big piece of equipment that sits in the lab. And the next step is to build a pilot plant and show that it works at industrial scale and with industrially relevant equipment. So, yeah, we're looking for money to do that.
Oh, well, good. Then we're all looking for money. So if anybody wants to contribute, right? We're talking about removing carbon from the atmosphere with Rob Annex, a professor of biological engineering at UW-Madison. And with him today is Krithana Srinivasa. She was the project manager for the UW-Madison Earth Repair XPRIZE Challenge Team. What questions do you have about the importance of finding ways to remove carbon from our atmosphere? Join in by calling 800-642-1234. Molly Stentz produced this segment. Our on-air producer today is Clara Neipert, and Trina LaSouza is our technical director. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. After 11:45, the weather guys are back to talk about all those temperature fluctuations. Will it ever be spring? But right now we are talking about removing carbon from the atmosphere. And we were just talking about doing the project on a larger scale. So what kind of backing do you need for this, Rob? I'm assuming you need all kinds of different organizations coming together to help you out with that.
Oh, absolutely. Because we use this industrial mineral waste, you know, we need, ideally, we would have companies that are already working in that space. And there are some. There are people that are ash marketers that take ash from coal-fired power plants and sell them into various industries. Who knew, right?
Yeah, I mean, right. There's good for them.
but they're the natural partner for us. Mm-hmm. And of course, we need somebody that wants to fund us. And we've been talking to, you know, various funding agencies and venture capitalists. And then, of course, we also need people who can build the facility, right? We're engineers, but we're faculty members, so
right.
We don't go out and build plants. So we're talking to them as well.
Okay.
And I'm sure there's many more that I can think of if we keep going. But yeah, it takes a village to build a carbon removal system.
Absolutely. So, Krithana, could you talk a little bit about this quote-unquote competition that you were in? What was that like to be involved in that?
Sure. So this was the XPRIZE carbon removal competition, and it's a 5-year-long competition that has a total grand prize of $100 million, and it was sponsored by Elon Musk. But the idea of the entire competition was to kind of help and speed it along, this process of everyone similar to us, like people in our position or who are maybe even more ahead in this stage of developing their technology, to help us get to this industrial scale, because we need to get there. We need to get there quick. This is actually one of the largest prize money that is awarded for such technologies. So the student competition was where we had to submit an idea, which we had. We submitted it, and that's when we got the prize money. It was in October of 2021. And so this competition is not over. It actually ends in 2025. And the main goal of it is that by 2025, you should have been able to capture 1,000 tons of CO2. So that's the pilot scale. And that's what we as Earth Repair are trying to achieve as well, and a bunch of other people. And what's the other great thing about this competition in general is that you don't need to, you can enter this competition at any point in time. So you don't need to have got through the first stages of the competition. If you just come in towards the end and you're like, all right, I've captured that 1,000 tons, you can get funding. And basically it is so that we can support these technologies and put funding into carbon removal and removing what's already there. I think it was really fun working with a team of students that came from literally every department in our university. And then we had our professors. I've worked so closely with Rob and our other professor, Boo. We were in lab day after day, and really it was a lot of learning, a lot of scrunching and doing work, but loved it.
Well, that's wonderful. That's the whole point, right? Love your work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now you're using byproducts that would normally go into a landfill or something. So tell us a little bit about what you're actually using to put the carbon in.
Sure. So like Rob mentioned, we're using industrial mineral waste. Mm-hmm. So that can come from different industries. They're usually byproducts from say coal power plants. So we have coal ash, from steel manufacturing plants. So that's steel slag, from cement manufacturing. So that's cement kiln dust. So these materials tend to have a high calcium content. That's kind of what we care about. And so these are the kind of materials that we could use. And this is what we're trying to source out, something that has a high calcium. And those materials are able to store the CO2 in a limestone kind of form. So it forms limestone in that mineral waste, and it's the CO2 is just stored in that waste for years to come.
So is the limestone then, is it safe to use once it's got it in? Okay. And then what are you using it for?
Yeah, so the limestone is kind of already now mixed in this coal ash or steel slag material. And so this material can be used in making concrete. So we use cement in making concrete, which is basically forming a rock. And our process is taking that CO2, forming a rock, and it's kind of, there's a synergy between these two processes. So we could use this material, this waste material, which now has that little bit of limestone in it. We can use it in the process of making concrete, so we can reduce how much cement we're using because it has similar properties, and then just put in some of our material and make concrete out of it. So what's another great thing about this is that cement is actually one of the most CO2 emitting manufacturing processes in the world. So for every ton of cement that we're producing, we're emitting one ton of carbon dioxide. So if we're able to reduce how much of that new cement that we need by supplementing it with material like ours or other materials, we're even avoiding the CO2 emissions, which is great.
Definitely. That's so cool. I just love this this process. Let's just go to the phones right now. We've got Dick in Brooklyn who has a question for you. Hi, Dick.
Hi. My question is, if this process becomes industrially feasible, what sort of dent can it make in terms of the total amount of carbon that needs to be removed from the atmosphere?
Rob, you want to take that?
That is a great question, Dick. It can make a significant dent in that there is, in the U.S., but particularly in India and China, there are very large reserves of these waste materials like fly ash. So we calculate that we can pull out gigatons, meaning multiple billions of tons of carbon from the atmosphere. And if we're replacing cement, we have, another big impact. Now, that is impressive. It is a lot. But remember that the worldwide emissions right now are 50 billion tons a year. So we don't want to be anybody's excuse to say, those wonderful people at the University of Wisconsin have figured this out. I can, you know, drive my SUV and fly my plane because we own. We can help with the negative part that is absolutely necessary at this point, the negative emissions. But we still very much need to remove, reduce and eliminate emissions. So it is a necessary part, but it isn't a solution to the whole problem at all.
Great question, Dick. Thank you so much for calling. Let's go next to Michael in Appleton. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Jill. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
My question, so I was listening to the talk about the contest, and my thought just went, could somebody just plant a bunch of trees? And then I was thinking, so I guess my question is, you know, for someone who's maybe a layperson like me and doesn't really have a solid conception of what's a ton of carbon like, so my question is, you know, like how much carbon would one tree lock up for a given year?
Well, and we kind of talked about that a little bit, but why don't you tell us again, Rob?
So if we had five silver maple trees growing for 25 years, Michael, that would be one ton. So in this contest, people absolutely could say we're going to plant trees, but trees grow kind of slowly, and to get to these quantities, that's not very promising. And unfortunately, right now, we're still seeing fairly significant deforestation across the planet. So even though people are busy planting trees in some places, we're still cutting down more in other places. So it might be pretty hard to win the contest by just saying I'm going to plant trees, because you have to show that, you know, that this can really happen, and then you have to demonstrate doing it. Trees are wonderful, and I'm not saying we shouldn't plant trees. We need to plant all the trees we can and stop deforestation and more or less all the other ways of reducing emissions and eliminating emissions. Because our technology, we of course love it, but it's not going to do it on its own. So we need all the different arrows in the quiver.
That's a good way of putting it, because all of these problems that we have, they're complicated. So there's not just one answer, is there?
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. So thanks for that question. And now, is this going to be tested hopefully soon on a larger scale? Did I read that right? You're hoping to get it out to a plant or something, right?
Yeah.
So what's going on?
Pilot plant.
Okay. So what's going on with that?
Well, so we're working on the industrial design, you know, mm-hmm. the design of the pilot plant, and we have a number of people who are willing to host it.
Oh.
So there are people like the TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority, that have big piles of ash, who are willing to have us build our plant there, and we're raising money.
But, okay.
You know, so we hope that in a year and a half or so, we would have the pilot plant running.
Great. And it's not going to be in Wisconsin because...
Well, you know, we absolutely could do it in Wisconsin, but the liquid that we're running through here is largely water. And in the winter in Wisconsin, water tends to freeze. So we'd have to have a insulated building that is heated, which is, it's not ridiculous amounts of heat, and we could do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that costs us that much more. So
okay.
The easy target for a small first plant is to go a little further south.
Okay. Kirthana, what are the biggest obstacles right now to doing this on a larger scale?
Sure. So I think, like we mentioned, we're using these different kind of, you know, industrial wastes. One of the challenges is first kind of locating them, and the next major one is just kind of knowing the compositions, like what is actually in that waste. I mentioned that we need to know how much calcium is in the waste, so just doing some initial tests on that. And depending on what this waste is made out of, the process might need to be tweaked a little bit just to make it more efficient. So I think that's our main challenge, which is just figuring out, okay, what's in our waste? How can we make it most efficient? We have done, we've tested a lot of these wastes in lab scale, so it's just about scaling that up and seeing if we can make the process as efficient as possible.
So this technology could really be used around the world, right?
It absolutely.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, great.
And probably should be, because lots of the reserves of these materials are in other places.
Yeah, for sure. So when you're making this concrete, is it similar in structure to what we're using now? Is it going to cause any problems when it's being used?
Well, so we've really sort of talked about two things. We just haven't been very clear about it.
Okay.
So the first one is that this material goes in and supplements, right? So replaces some of the Portland cement in making concrete.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually already done and it's required. It makes the cement stronger. So in Wisconsin, up to 30%, between 20 and 30% has to be replaced with something like fly ash. Putting our material in there just sequesters carbon and does the same thing. It makes the concrete stronger and replaces some Portland cement, so it reduces its carbon footprint. Now, in the lab, we're also working on a non-Portland cement, so a whole other kind of cement. The general categories, people call it geopolymer. They call it alkali-activated cement. But when we make Portland cement, we take limestone and we put it in a kiln at high temperatures, and that's removes the CO2 because limestone, right, is calcium carbonate. We heat it up and blow off the CO2, and that's how we make cement. So all that heat adding all that heat emits a lot of CO2, and the limestone losing its CO2 does as well. So we're working on another kind of cement that doesn't do either of those steps.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can be actually a carbon, with our carbon capture, it can be a carbon negative cement, cement that actually reduces the carbon from the atmosphere.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? If you've got a question about carbon capture, give us a call. Lines are open, 800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email. It's ideas@wpr.org. Now, Matt from Madison sent us an email, and he says the best way to mitigate the effects of carbon is don't put it there in the first place. But that's not profitable. And if it isn't profitable, America won't do it. What do you think, Rob?
Well, I hope he's wrong.
Yeah.
Because it is absolutely true, right? We need to take the CO2 out of the air, but at the same time, before, even more importantly, we need to eliminate emissions. And we have to figure out some way to make that be, you know, attractive to people. I'm not really a policy person. I pretend to be sometimes, but
don't we all?
more and more, you know, insurance companies, the stock market are internalizing the costs of climate change, and companies need to pay attention to it. And there are a significant number of responsible firms that have made, without any coercion and without any clear profit motive other than we'd like to stay in business, have made pledges to get to a net zero, right? That they'll have zero emissions on net from there into their company.
Okay. And Krithana, being a younger person, just graduated, what do you see in the future, besides obviously this project taking off, but what else are you seeing in carbon capture?
Well, I'm definitely seeing a lot more attention being paid to this. Even with this competition, I mean, we had participants from all around the world, not only America, which is really encouraging. And it's not the only thing that's being done. I think in the government, we're having more funding. The DOE has more funding towards carbon removal and direct air capture technologies. We have some policies in the U.S., like the California low fuel standard. These are just like incentives that exist to kind of encourage these kind of technologies to be more into scale. And in Europe, there's like a carbon tax. So there's a carbon market. I am personally more encouraged. I am hopeful. I think we are definitely in the right direction. There's still definitely a lot more funding that needs to be put into this entire field, and it will come from different sources, probably government, probably like big tech and other big corporations, but the sooner the better. So, but I'm still hopeful.
Well, that's good, because we need a lot of hopeful people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. So we've got some calls coming in, but before we get the information from them, Rob, what's next? What projects are you working on next? As far as, are you still staying in like the carbon business, I should say. What else is going on with your lab?
Yeah, this is consuming. It has taken up most of the space, most of the oxygen in the room.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on the carbon negative concrete or cement that I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. and trying to push this forward. You know, there are a few other interesting little things on the side, but you know, really this is a priority because it's urgent.
Yeah. Now, I was reading some of the information, and it said that this will stay in this concrete for about 100 years. Is that correct? Or
no, it's much longer than
much
that.
Much longer. Okay.
We're essentially making limestone, right? If it's in a different structure, you call it calcite, but mm-hmm. you know, and that's stable, right? I mean, that's the stone that's under most of Wisconsin.
Yes.
No, it'll be around for tens of thousands of years.
Oh, wonderful. And if it gets broken up, does that release the back into the air?
No.
It's not.
Not
oh,
at
wow.
all. Great. You'd have to pour acid on it.
Okay. Well, if we don't have acid rain, we're in good shape.
Well, but we do have acid rain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But acid rain isn't nearly low enough pH. It isn't nearly acidic enough.
Okay.
So there is some release of limestone or CO2 from limestone from acid rain, but it's minuscule. It's unmeasurable almost.
Sure. Okay. Well, we do have a phone call here from John in Milwaukee. Hi, John. What's your question?
Well, I'm wondering if there's any research looking at what's naturally happening. That is, shells and clams are making calcium carbonate, making limestone. Is there anything attempting to use that natural process that we see in living organisms and accelerate it?
Oh, absolutely. So earlier when Kirthana mentioned oceans, well, one of the big activities there is just as you say, organisms that take CO2 and make shells. So you can stimulate their growth. And so fertilizing the oceans to remove more CO2 is one of the many things that are possible and that we need to do.
Great question, John. Thank you. And let's go to Richard and Ethric. Hi, Richard. What's your question?
Hi. I'm a farmer, and I get read a lot of farm publications, and there's been a lot of talk about carbon credits for agriculture, credits on your woodlands, grasslands, things like that. So what can you tell me about that?
Well, you're right. There absolutely are. And it's a little bit tricky. So at one point, there was a Chicago Climate Exchange that most of what they sold there was a carbon market. And mostly what they sold was agricultural soil sequestration of carbon, right? So the kinds of things you've talked about, planting perennial grasses, doing no-till, various activities that, you know, under your control and management. But unfortunately, you know, when you plant a beautiful field of perennial grasses, you can also till it, right? You can go back and reverse that. So the market didn't actually function very well because the people who were paying the money sort of recognized that, well, what's the guarantee that this will really be here? So that was one experiment that kind of came and went. But people are revisiting it and thinking about ways to verify, right, that the carbon's still there. So I think that is likely in the future. And then there are some, of course, even farther out things that you may have heard of. So if you take biomass, like you take the corn stalks and convert them through pyrolysis, you can make biochar, sort of looks like charcoal. And you put that in the soil, and again, it's stable for hundreds of years. And that's pretty obvious. You put the carbon in and it's stable and it's not reversible. So that's a better way to, or a more likely way to be able to get agricultural carbon credits.
Thanks for the call, Richard. Appreciate that. Kirthana, you just graduated with your master's degree. So what's next? Are you going to stay with this project, or what does your future look like from where you're standing right now?
Sure. Yes, I will definitely be continuing with this project, and I'm not letting go of Earth Repair. I really believe in what we've done, and I can see us, you know, scaling up in the future. It's very exciting, so definitely will be involved with Earth Repair. But I also do have another job with an engineering consulting company, and I'll be doing that as well. It'll just, you know, is whatever's best for me at wherever I am in life, it'll I'll make my decisions accordingly, but definitely not letting go of earth repair.
Well, good. That's great to hear. And Rob, do you see that with your students, that they're just passionate about this the carbon topic?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When the contest was announced, we sort of put out, you know, a little announcement saying, hey, maybe we form a team.
Uh-huh.
And there was just huge response.
Wow.
A lot of students from the Energy Analysis and Policy program that, you know, it fit aligned nicely with them and engineers. And yeah, I would say young people today are very passionate about this topic.
It's a lot more awareness than it was even just 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people really want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fun to study it, but what can we do? And so the idea that we were actually going to build some hardware and potentially pull carbon out of the air was pretty exciting.
Absolutely. Where did that idea come from, by the way?
Well, so my colleague Bu Wang and his postdoc, who were doing, he does a lot of cement concrete related research, and they were doing experiments with these industrial mineral wastes, and they just made a discovery. You know, it was the aha moment, the light bulb came on. They, in just trying to adjust the pH, they recognized that, oh my gosh, these materials, no one knew that would happen, will generate this CO2 absorbent, you know, all this material that they recognized would make a good absorbent for direct air capture. And at the same time, it stores the carbon right there in the waste. And that was sort of the, okay. And from there on, you know, Boo talked to me about let's try to get some grants, and we've gotten some grants to do the engineering, right? To take that idea and turn it into an efficient and effective technology.
So is Elon Musk going to, you know, come visit?
I doubt it. He seems sort of busy with some other activities right now.
Yeah, he's very, very busy. Well, I want to thank you both so much for being with us and explaining this to us, because it's complicated, but you made it sound fairly simple. So we understand it, and we really want you to come back and let us know how you're doing, and especially when you get that model up and see how it works. So thank you very much, both of you, for being with us. We've been talking with Rob Annex, a professor of biological engineering at UW-Madison, and Krithana Srinivasa was a project manager for the UW-Madison Earth Repair XPRIZE Challenge team. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back to talk about weather with the weather guys. Thank you.